So the first thing I want to point out to you all, just because it seems like it's appropriate, is that St. Paul and Silas are in prison, and they are, what are they doing? Singing hymns and psalms, right? No piano. Right? Here we are. And it's important that we can do this. I'm just going to tell you a quick side story because some of you have heard this, but you know that when our youth group went to Nicaragua, we watched this movie Romero, and there's a one point in the story where Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of El Salvador, is walking towards the church, and the army is there and won't let him in. Won't let him into the church. So they're all in the street, and he turns to them and he says, "Let us begin the Mass here." And then he says, "The Lord be with you," and they say, "And also, and with your spirit," and they just go on. And I stopped the movie at that point. All the kids are watching it. And I stopped and I said, "Now, this is important. Because there's going to come a time in your life when you don't have the," it was that time, "in the green, you don't have that green book in front of you. And you're going to need to know this stuff. And it's going to be important that you know it. And powerful. Just like these people." And they all went, "Oh yeah, right, okay." So, there you go. It's important that we can do this. First thing. The second thing is, I want to talk about the story in the book of Acts, the story of Paul and Silas in jail. And the first thing I want to say, though, before that is, you know how in Seder meals, during the Passover, if you've ever been into one, that the story gets told in the first person plural. We were slaves in the land of Egypt. And the Lord delivered us with a mighty arm and an outstretched hand. Right? It's like we were there. We weren't there, we were there. And that's how they tell the story of the Exodus, of the Passover. God delivering us, not them, us. It's important because Luke, the writer of Acts, does something similarly in the book of Acts here. For 15 chapters, we had Luke narrating the story of how Paul and Peter and Paul and all these people, they did all these things, and they did this, and he did that, and he went there, and they went there. In chapter 16, that voice changes. Instead of they, it's we. All of a sudden, in chapter 16, we set out to go across to Macedonia because someone had called in a vision to Paul that they needed help. And so we got on board and we went. Isn't that interesting? This change happens from them to us. And I wonder if Luke is up to something about that. And I wonder if what he's getting at is that those of us who are reading this thing end up saying, "Oh, that was a great story. You know, that happened a long time ago. That was great." And that Luke is saying, "Oh, no, no, no. Not then. Not them. Us. Us. You, dear reader, are a part of this. And it's important. This is the Acts of the Apostles." And I wonder if he's saying, "And how about your acts too? What's your part to play in this?" So, keep that in mind. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You get? Yeah? Okay. All right. Good. All right. So keep that in mind as we go through this story. So, Paul and Silas, they go to Philippi. And they find a place where there's people worshiping, Gentiles who are worshiping, and they proclaim Jesus, and a woman named Lydia gets it, and she takes them, and she invites them to come to their house to stay, and they stay there at this woman's house, while in the meantime, they're out doing their missionary thing. They're proclaiming Jesus, and they're talking to people about Jesus, and they're wandering around, and here's this servant girl, this slave, and she has a spirit of divination. Right, she knows who they are, and she keeps saying, she's following them day after day, saying, "You know, these are servants of the Most High God, and they bring to you a way of salvation." And she's saying this over and over again every day. And the little thing that Luke adds is, this woman who has the spirit of divination, her owners are making a lot of money on her. So, you know, it's just like, I don't know, like a people who are going to, fortune tellers, right? Making a lot of money. You can make a lot of money doing that, I guess. And certainly in the ancient world, she's got this spirit, and it's really good. She works, it's true, and they're making a lot of money on her. And then it says, after some days, Paul gets annoyed. That's our translation. But you know, that word can be annoyed, it can be grieved, and it can be distressed. Right? And there's lots of ink spilled. Scholars wonder why Paul was annoyed. Was it because she was not proclaiming Jesus? She was making too big of a deal about them, blah, blah, blah. I say no. I think grieved is the right word. He is grieved that this soul has been captured by a spirit that isn't of her. And so Paul turns around in his grief or annoyance or whatever it is and orders the spirit out of her. And at that time, the spirit comes out of her. Here's what I think also, and is this. When people have been possessed by a spirit, you don't know who's driving the bus, right? You don't know if it's the spirit doing that. You don't know if it's them doing it. And I think what's happening in this is that I think there's a reason that she's following Paul and Silas around. I think that she's in there and she's captured. And she somehow knows that that's the answer for me. And so she keeps following them. They're proclaiming us. They're proclaiming a message of salvation, of healing. They're proclaiming a message of healing. Why would a spirit go towards that? A spirit wouldn't want to do that, a possessing spirit. But there was something in that woman that needed to be healed and freed. And she knew it, and she drove herself to get to him and spoke to them until they got it. And Paul gets it and heals her. And the reason I say that about that dynamic is because I know that people who have different spirits find themselves coming to this church. And it's not the spirit that's got them that brings them here. It's them. In spite of the Spirit. And we've seen it again and again. The spirit that comes here most often is the spirit of heroin and addiction. So, there's a reason that that woman insists and persists. And I think that's it. So Paul liberates her. And when he liberates her, well, certain rights get stepped on. The right of the owners of that woman to make money. And that's the annoyance. And that's what really brings the whole trouble. She's freed, and they're angry. And so they take Paul and Silas. And where do they take them? To the marketplace. That's not coincidental. They're losing their financial, their possibility of financial gain. So they take them right to the marketplace, where the economy is. And everybody gets mad at them, and they fall on them, and they beat them. And they throw them into jail. All right. So there they are in jail. Now, again, they're singing hymns and psalms with no piano. And the people are listening to them. The people in prison are listening. And they're told, and we are told that they get put into the deepest, darkest cell and with shackles around their legs. Okay. And they're singing, and all of a sudden, God sends this earthquake. Right? And in the earthquake, all the doors of the jail fly open, the shackles fall free, everybody's free to go. They're free. God has set them free. Get that. And yet, Paul and Silas sit there. They don't exercise their freedom. Why? Because if they do, the jailer will die. That's the only reason. The jailer pulls out his sword. He's going to kill himself because he knows in Roman justice, the jailer who lets someone escape receives death. It's just how it is. That's how you know you get committed jailers. Okay? Paul knows that. He yells out, "Don't kill yourself. We're all here. We are here." God set them free. But they stay. They stay for the sake of this guy who maybe if you squint, you can say he's their neighbor, that they're loving, because he, after all, he's sleeping in the next room or two over. So in the most vague sense, he's their neighbor. But more, he's a stranger. They don't know him. He doesn't know them. And the reality is, it's not just he's a stranger. He's their enemy. His livelihood and his life depend upon keeping those two guys in jail. That sounds like an enemy to me. So, for the sake of this very vague neighbor, definitely stranger, and probably enemy, Paul and Silas sit tight and say, "Don't hurt yourself. We're all here." And the jailer just is all over himself. He can't believe it, that these people would renounce their freedom for his sake. And in that action, he recognizes something. And he asks what he must do to be saved. And they tell him. And he takes them to his house. He binds their wounds. He feeds them. And they baptize him and his family. It's an incredible story. Now, here, remember I was telling you about not them but us? Here's us. In a world that glorifies freedom and rights. Every time we start talking about freedom and rights, we need to read Acts 16 again. We have the right to bear arms. We have the right. And we have the freedom to have them. Okay, I'll grant you that. At what cost? Are we insisting on that right above every other person's life? Paul and Silas renounced their freedom for the sake of a guy that's keeping them in jail to save his life. That's real freedom. That's real freedom. And the choices that we make should not come out of, "I have this sort of vague freedom that the nation gives me." They need to be made by this. How is it going to affect my neighbor, strangers, even my enemies? So when you hear people arguing about gun control being a attack on our rights and all of that stuff and on our freedoms, say, maybe it is. read Acts 16 again. Not every freedom that we have is to be exercised. And every freedom that we have must be exercised considering our neighbors, strangers, and even our enemies, and what's best for them. It's a stunning story that Paul and Silas sit in the jail, considering, what would it mean if I exercised my freedom? It would mean that guy loses his life. That is the spirit of Jesus. To say, I am free to not do that stuff. I am free to not exercise every single freedom that I have been given. But I am free also to take a look at the fact that my freedom doesn't really mean anything if it isn't taking into account love of God and love of neighbor and love of strangers and enemies. That's the spirit of Jesus that Paul and Silas are captured by. That's what possesses Paul and Silas. What am I doing? What I do, how is it going to affect them? We live in a very difficult time. We live in a very violent time. And we live in a time where we feel attacked. Our rights, our freedoms, our identities, all of those things. And it's true, we do feel that way. So, Acts 16. We haven't been beaten with rods, stripped and beaten with rods, and thrown into prison. We haven't come anywhere near that. But they are our example. Holy mackerel. They sit and they sing hymns and psalms and give thanks. And they consider, even in that situation, how's that going to affect that guy? And they sit tight. And they trust the Spirit of Jesus. And indeed, the Spirit of God delivers this jailer from his bondage and delivers him into the freedom of the children of God, into love. And instead of binding them, he binds their wounds and feeds them. That's freedom. That's what we are called to bear witness to. Acts 16, it's a stunning story. It's our story. May we live in such freedom.